This is Reel 3 of 5 Reels, interviewing Amanda Tonseth Hansen in Fairbanks in early summer 1973.
She came over. She lived 17 miles from me by the odometer of a car over in Tempe, where her husband's associated with the University of Arizona there in Tempe. Mm-hmm. And he's Dr. Mason now. He's got his doctorate. PhD? He's got his doctorate. Mm-hmm. And he's a, I think he's does advising and such things. But she took me to this doctor, and he found that I had, there was a bladder infection of some kind. And I must have, from the pains that I had and everything, I must have had that same thing when I was up here the last summer.
Yeah.
As earlier. Because I had some of those same pain, same kind of pains, in addition to being a diabetic.
Yes.
And this doctor has been, he kind of researched into me, mm-hmm. and I signed a paper so that he could send to the Mason Clinic and get my record, as far as my medical record. And I also wrote up my record for the last 20 years.
You have a competent doctor.
A competent doctor there, and saw him. He gave me quite a checkup then, and then I've been seeing him every month. He has sent me, seeing I'm a diabetic, he has sent me to a doctor not very far from his office in another building, who is specializing just in foot work. From the ankle down, one wouldn't think it was enough to keep a doctor real busy. But I guess the feet are very important when a person is a diabetic.
Is that? Oh, yeah.
And if a person can get a little scratch or a bad corner or something, can make it so they have to have the surgery for it, yes. Amputation.
Right.
And so that...
As a matter of fact, I know... I know that because Chuck Hoyt, Bill Angerman's son, has had lots and lots of problems, and he's even lost one leg. Been in the hospital this summer again, having more toes removed.
Oh my!
Foot. So he's in.
The feet are supposed to be very important.
Yeah. Well, and I'm glad that you're taking good care of it.
I never was a drinking person or anything, but. My son last year had sent me a pass, being with Reeve, high up as he is and a part owner there of Reeve Evolution. He's the only one outside of Reeve's family that has an interest in the company financially. So he sent me a pass on this one airline, and that flew to Los Angeles, then to Denver, and then to SeaTac. And then I changed to Alaska Airlines from there on up to Fairbanks. Mm-hmm. And it happened that we got on the plane there at Los Angeles from the other plane. Why, there was something wrong with the engine or something. So we hadn't loaded yet. And so they sent over, got another plane to take its place. And they load us on that, and after we were all loaded and everything, they found there was something wrong with that engine.
Uh-oh.
And so the pilot broke.
Before I forget it, and before we go any further, tell me when you were married.
Well, let's go back a little bit further than that. We had, when we came up from China, my folks were very strong Lutheran. From childhood, there was no Lutheran churches here. The St. Matthew's Church was too far away. So we started going to the Methodist Church, which was then on 3rd between Cushman and Turner, and facing what was later made into the federal building.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that wasn't completed before in the spring of 1934. But this was, of course, way back in the... And somehow or other, after we'd been attending there for a while, the St. Matthew's Church was just too far for Mother to walk. in the wintertime when we had the severe weather. So then somehow or other, after a change of ministers there at the Methodist Church, my dad didn't see eye to eye with the minister or something, so we started going up to the Presbyterian Church. And they joined that church. And then the minister that we had up there had come from China with his wife, and they'd had a number of babies over there and buried them all. Mm-hmm. And he was a very sincere man. And he had a special class for the young people that were wanting to join the church and everything. And my younger brother and I joined the church on January 9th of 1915, while I was still 14 years old. My brother's since transferred to an Episcopal church, and of course he's been away from here so many years that he no longer belongs here. But right now I'm the senior member of this church that's up on 7th and Cushman. Exactly. And I've told him never to take my name off the rolls till death does its part. Mm-hmm. Because the people that I knew that were members, they either died or moved away. And we joined 6 months before, or 5 months or so before Ener joined. He joined just before he went outside that time in 1915. Mm-hmm. And I've been a member of that church ever since. And that's the church that has the church that was there at that time is the one that's out in Alaska. But they have changed it so much that it doesn't look the same. That
entrance. Did you meet your husband through?
No,
your
I was after I'd been teaching the Bergmans out there at the 18 mile. Then I came into town again, they were starting a school down in the Manly Hot Springs area. There was two families there, one at Woodchopper in the Manly Hot Springs district, not to be misconstrued as the one in the Upper Yukon. And then there was one over on...
Tofty?
No, it was beyond Tofty. I've forgotten the name of the mountain now, as they call it. But it was the Anderson family, and it was quite a family of youngsters over there. But the Hostlers were over there at Woodchopper, and I went down there to teach, open up that school. And I spent 6 weeks of the 3 months that I was contracted for at Woodchopper, and then went up to Gold Basin, that was the name of the place. Up beyond, on the other side of Tofty with the Anderson children. And the one, I think he's still in town here, the youngest of the boys, he was just a baby at that time, mm-hmm. Philip. I think he's still in town.
I think Phil Anderson, I think he's in Anchorage.
Oh, maybe he is.
He moved to Anchorage. And they later lived in Nenana, is that the...
They had been in Nenana too.
Last I heard, he was in Anchorage.
And it was quite a family of them. And it was when I was down there that I met the man I later married. Mm-hmm. Then I came up here and was able to... Mrs. Collins, Mrs. E.B. Collins, the first Mrs. E.B. Collins, who was a school teacher, they were living at Fox and that, but Margaret had finished high school, the grades, and they were to move into town, she and Margaret. And she got a job here, as Mrs. Collins had been a teacher out there at Fox, and she got a job here in Fairbanks at the schools, and that left the Fox school vacant. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get that job, and I had that for a year and a half. They had their vacations in the wintertime. And I was just reminiscing when Bob and I were going out to Pedro the other day, going over that road. I'd walked it several different times. And used to go on the old narrow gauge railroad and sometimes come, and then I'd go out with the Carl Burge on Sunday. I'd come back on the railroad right. Come by there right after school was out on Fridays, and I'd come into town, mm-hmm. and then take Carl Burge's stage, which was just a just a car, mm-hmm. an old-fashioned car, out on Sunday mornings, so I'd be ready for school on Mondays. Mm-hmm. But a few times I walked her from here to Fox. I was young then, yeah. could. Then in the I was had just come in from Fox when the flight of the army flyers came from New York to Nome mm-hmm. in 1920, and I was out here at what was later Weeks Field and that mm-hmm. when they landed. It was a ballpark up there originally. The first ballpark, though, in Fairbanks was over there where the powerhouse and that is over in Garden Island there.
Where the FE powerhouse
Yes, mm-hmm. and where so many buildings now. That it was a cow pasture, except for ball games yeah. days, and then they would chase the cows to the far end or something like that, and they'd, and yeah. they'd have their ball games. And then they changed it over to Weeks Field, and that was way out of town in a way. But we would, they, an airplane had been brought up here in the, while we were still a teen, and I was just still a teenager, and, they charged admission to get into the park where this fellow, this fellow had torn down his plane, shipped it up here, reassembled it, and then they charged admission to see him taking off and landing. And my dad took us up and got permission to go into the school, and we went up way up into the cupola and watched them. We didn't. We couldn't see right down to see him taking off, but we could see him flying around. Uh-huh. But when we were children, some relatives of ours over in Norway would send mother kind of funny paper sections from the Norwegian papers. And in some of those, I wish we could have saved them through the years, because they would be, oh, worth their weight in gold right now. Yes. But you only have so much room to put things, especially when there's a family of five growing up in a small house. And that showed us an ingenious way of strapping a machine onto a person's back that had a propeller that turned. And people would put these on, and they'd be flying around just without any other things.
Yeah.
But the motor would be strong enough to lift them up on the ground, and they'd be flying all around.
Yeah.
And I wish that we had at least one of those things yeah. left. That's one of the big regrets from that. But it was really odd, and we kids just ate those things up. And I had my first, but I was married, went down to Kuskokwim then. I had a chance to get that school. The school was just opening up at Napmute, N-A-P-A-M-U-T-E. And they wanted an older woman. And I had applied for a position through the Territory School Superintendent, I forget what, Lester Henderson, he was in Juneau. And he's had supervision of all the Alaskan Territorial Schools. And I had applied for a school up near Nome or Teller or someplace, and a teacher that had come up by boat as a tourist got that job.
Oh.
And so Mr. Henderson had me sent to Napmute instead. I went from here to the North Nenana. On the train, then by ferry to Nenana, then by one boat to Tanna, then another boat to the to Holy Cross, where I hired some natives that took me across the portage to the Kuskokwim, and then I got on a little tiny propeller stern wheeler.
Mm-hmm.
That took me on up to Napmute.
Now, was that the Lavelle Young?
No, no, no. This was this you could have put inside of the Lavelle Young's engine room.
Yeah.
It was so small.
Oh, I see.
And it was run by a captain and who had a big, fat Native woman as a wife and that. And they had bunks in the engine room, too. And I had was assigned one of them for this trip up the Kuskokwim. And, of course, I tried to act like I was way up in the 20s and all. And I was just barely 20 that June, and this was not in August. And along comes the women had just been given their franchise in Alaska.
Yeah.
And that was first winter that the women were allowed to vote. And so they needed some people to be on the election board. And they said, oh, you can be on the election board with us. And I said, no, I can't. Aren't you an American? I said, yes, I am, but I'm not old enough. They required us to be 21 at that time. So
you didn't vote that year.
I couldn't vote. I was only 20.
Yeah.
So I had to let them know I was only 20. So I celebrated my 21st birthday there, and the experience I had down there, I was the only white woman down there. Well, there was one 8 miles below, but on the other side of the river, and it was quite a treacherous trip down there. I saw her once that winter, and she'd been dead for quite a number of years. She later moved back east someplace. I lost track of her. But
you saw one white woman all winter.
I saw one white woman, and I had the experiences there will be a chapter in the book that I hope to write sometime as with the heading The Adventures and Misadventures of a Manta. I think I can make a very interesting book.
I bet you can.
And without touching on the pathetic things.
Yes.
So I'd been corresponding with Mr. Hansen during the winter and that to a certain extent, but we decided that we'd get married, and so my trying any more teaching, and I was married the 7th of November of 21, and married right here in this house. And that was one of the biggest mistakes I ever made in my life. I held on to it.
What was his first name?
Siegfried.
And had he been in the country?
He had been in the country for a number of years. For some reason or other, he had had some physical defect. I never did learn that, what it was, that he couldn't, that he was rejected from the army when they had the drafts and everything. And I thought, well, I guess we each thought each other was different from what we were, and maybe he thought I had some money after all this teaching. But our marriage started going sour very early, and I never did believe in divorce. And I held it out and held it out. And then when he finally said we'd better get divorced, why, I said, well, wait till the kids get through school. And then the war came along, and things got worse and worse between us, so that he didn't want to support me or anything else. So I thought if I had to support myself, I could just do it on my own. And
it'd be better. And I paid for atmosphere.
I paid for my own divorce when I got it, but the kids.
Well, your children, though, you have three.
I have three boys.
And
The first one was born the 27th of August, 1922.
Is that?
That's Robert Dale. And the second one was born the 4th of July of 1924. That's Stanley. And we had our first flight together when we were coming up from Manly Hot Springs to Fairbanks in the spring of 1927. So I could welcome Donald, the youngest one, which I was hoping would be a girl, but wasn't. And we had our first flight in an open cockpit biplane, sitting in front of the pilot. Mm-hmm. And I was desperately ill with the flu at the time.
And expecting this
And 7 months pregnant. And we were crowded into this little cockpit in front of the pilot. And it was 40 below, ski plane. And I had they had taken me from the from our home out there in Tofty to Hotch Manley on a bobsled, and I was laying on a mattress and covered up on the trip there, and I was so desperately sick. And when I was brought here to the house, and Dr. Romig, who was my doctor at that time, came to see me here, and he said, "You belong in the hospital," and he kept me there for 6 days. And then in May, again, I went back, and after quite a stay at the hospital, I forced Donald to come, and because I was getting sicker by the minute, and so he was born.
And so he was born
the 16th of May.
16th of May.
In 1927. I wasn't quite 27 then. And that was the end of that. Then on the 4th of July in 1946, I had been out to the assembly again, but they met in Vancouver, Washington that year. And Bob wrote me in the I wasn't then. Yeah, I guess it was. He wrote me and said, "Mother," he says, "as long as you're in the States," he says, "you might as well come east for the wedding." He was going to be getting married to a girl in Pittsburgh whose brother-in-law had been with Bob in the Army in Anchorage and said that they should meet each other. And so they did. So I went east then, flew east to the wedding, and I'd even forgotten the addresses and everything else, but I managed to contact and get to the Bob's intended and stayed with them. And then they were to be married on the 4th of July over in McKeesport, which is right adjacent to Pittsburgh. And as we got to the church, by the it was a Greek Orthodox church they were to be married in, and the bride and groom are met at the doorway without the people going into the church, but they're met at the doorway and asked why they're coming there. And then the bride and groom will go in, and the invited guests follow them. And while I was looking around, not knowing anybody else except my brother who had come over from Washington, D.C. to be best man at the wedding, why all others were strangers or that I'd just met a day or two before. And here, all of a sudden, I was engulfed in a pair of arms of Stanley. He'd managed to get away from where he was taking special training in the Air Force and had come up to Pittsburgh for the wedding. And I hadn't noticed him because I wasn't expecting to see anybody.
What a surprise.
Before he, and then he and I stood together, and that was on his 22nd birthday. Was out in 46, you see, and he was born in 24.
Yeah.
And so we stood side by side when Bob took his wife.
Then you were, your son Robert now is vice president for Reeve?
Vice president for Reeve, and he does an awful lot of the running around and everything.
The administrative work.
Yes, he does an awful lot of that. Reeve was an active pilot when he first started.
Yes,
right.
And now Stanley is where?
He is back in Moses Lake now.
And,
He was elevated to be colonel and in the Air Force. And when I made that trip to the Orient and Down Under, he missed me by 24 hours in Tokyo and also in Bangkok.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Is he still in the Air Force?
Well, he is in a way. He's not. He hasn't been completely discharged, but he's off the payroll for the time being.
I see.
They didn't have any room for another colonel in his outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was elevated from lieutenant colonel to full colonel, why then kind of just lost out. So he's just not flying right now, and he just loves to fly.
But he's still in the Air Force.
Well, he can't be. He's not old enough to be let out to retire, and so in a way he is, and in a way he isn't. He's not in the payroll, but he's he can be called back at any time and have to
answer. He's in Moses Lake, Washington.
He's living in Moses Lake, Washington, with his wife and the son, who has been married but now is now divorced.
And Donald, your son Donald.
Stanley is also a grandfather.
Oh.
His son has two sons of his own. And Bob has three grandsons. See, I had three sons. Bob has six children, a girl, three boys, and two girls, so it's six altogether. Stanley has only the one son, and that he's never been north. Greg hasn't. And Donald is married and a school teacher, and he is in Anchorage, and he's teaching there. And he has two little boys. He was married much later than the other boys were, so that his oldest one is only nine now, so it'll be some time before he becomes a grandfather.
Yes.
But I have a lot of fun saying I'm the mother of two grandfathers.
Yeah. Well, I know Bob was up here for Golden Days, and he's a grand officer of the Pioneers of Alaska.
He's chaplain. Mm-hmm.
I've met him and his wife, but I've attended the last three Pioneer conventions.
It will be, I haven't attended any of them. I belong to Pioneer Women.
That's where I met him. Was at a Pioneer convention in Ketchikan, I think.
Oh. Well, you see, as a member of the Pioneer Women, we aren't affiliated with the Pioneers. This Pioneer Women of Alaska was instituted on February 16th. 1916. I'm quite sure this is the 16th or 19th of 1916, which was before I was eligible for joining. And I joined it in 1925 when I was in town. And Mother insisted I join instead of she could have just well joined it before that.
Okay, now on February 16th, 1916, was that the auxiliary or?
No, that was the real Pioneer Women of Alaska. No,
that's when they organized.
That was when the Pioneer Women organized, and in order to belong to that, one had to come to Alaska or the Yukon watershed, and that has been our ruling all the time, with clothes on. We couldn't come through the through birth that way. We couldn't be born in Alaska or the Yukon watershed. And they started an auxiliary, a Native sons and daughters, and included even the smallest ones of all ages, instead of dividing it up so that the active members would be, say, 13 or 14 years old and through 20 or 21. Mm-hmm. And where they would have things in common and that. And so that only lasted a few years. Of course, I wasn't eligible for any of that.
But the Pioneer Women organized
in February.
And you had to come to Alaska or the Yukon watershed with your clothes on prior to...
To begin with, they didn't have a definite, they had 15 years of membership, Alaska residency.
Oh.
But then it was changed definitely a number of years ago to January 1st, 1908. Mrs. Rust had come in 1908, but she was already a past president of the Pioneer Women of Alaska before they made that change. And any of those that were members of it before they made that definite change that had come in after 1908 deadline, that is January 1st, 1908, why they were allowed to stay, keep their membership if they wanted it to.
But if it was organized in 1916, then the requirement was that you had to have 15 years residency
in order to belong
so
at that time.
So the only ones who could join in 1916 were the ones who had come in 1900 or 1901?
Yeah. And then, they had that 15 years. That made it so every year it was another. It was added. You know, it was.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't back from 1916. Well, 1920, it would make it so it would be 1905 and all like that.
I see.
But when I joined, I was eligible, and they made that change quite a few years after I'd been a member.
Who keeps the records of the Pioneer Women of Alaska? Who has the minutes in the...
Well, the secretary has had that, and I don't know if Mrs. Frost has turned it over to Adriana now or not. Mrs. Frost has been wanting us to disband completely. Mm-hmm. So when we met in June, soon after I came, it was only four of us then, we decided that we would keep up. Mrs. Russ was trying to make us so that we would quit right then as far as being Pioneer Women are concerned. But we decided we'd keep it up for As long as there's one or two of us alive.
Well,
and able to attend to things.
Now, Sunday at the... I'm sorry I didn't bring that list with me. Let me check in my purse here a second.
You got that thing off, don't you? Is that the extent of your names there?
This is reel 4 of 5 reels. Mike Dalton of Fairbanks interviewing Amanta Tonseth Hansen of Fairbanks. Interview was done in her log home on 3rd Avenue in Fairbanks in early summer of 1973.
Class of 7, there is only 2 of us left, her cousin and myself, because George died last year, and I didn't even know it before.
George
Bentley. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know it. I overlooked it in the paper. Of course, I can't read the papers thoroughly, and now I can't read much of anything of it.
So the from your high school graduation class, there's you and then Barbara Lindbergh's
cousin, Wilma, the former Wilma Carlson.
Mm-hmm.
We're the only two that
and
are
where
alive.
Where is she now?
I don't know. They left shortly after. She and her mother and stepfather and half-sister or brother or whatever it is. Why, they left shortly after graduation. I haven't seen or heard of Wilma in all these years.
I see.
And I wanted to know if she was still alive, because the rest of our graduation class had all died. Alton Orlale was one of them, you see. The first to die was the valedictorian of the class, and she died the next spring from TB. Then Martin Nuppy's son died of a couple of years afterwards, also of TB. You know, that was more prevalent at that time.
Right.
And they didn't know much about cancer at that time either.
Mm-hmm.
I think my father's mother died from cancer. They something about having a broken leg or something like that, and hadn't been well for a long time and all. And after what I've learned of cancer, why, she probably had cancer of the bone that broke the hip from that. Because I think she died from cancer, I'm not sure. But they've got cancer more or less licked now.
Yeah. One day they'll find a cure for it. That'll be a
Well, I'm not scared of cancer anymore, because I don't think... it's nearly 14 years since I had the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky, though, I didn't get in the breast. I have to fight with this thing. That's why I took care of it. I have to start taking care of it in the morning now, mm-hmm. about before 9 o'clock if I can.
Mm-hmm.
So I never know when it's going to act.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get discharged during the day, or I never know when. I have to have a bag on to it at all times.
Yeah. Right.
You get to learn to live with it, though.
Right.
Look at all the travels I've made, up and down the highway and everything else.
And over the ocean and across the sea. We were talking when just before I changed to a new tape, we were talking about the Pioneer Women of Alaska.
Yeah.
And you said that it was organized February, you think the date was 16th.
I think it was the 19th.
February 19th, 1916.
Yeah, it was before I was eligible for it.
And
they had the minimum age of 18 there.
You had to be at least 18 years old. You had to have come to the country, to Alaska, or to the Yukon watershed prior to... with your clothes on, 15 years and a 15-year residence in Alaska.
Yeah.
So as years progressed, then you came in
1907.
So in 19...
And I didn't join before in about 1925, so I had been here about 18 years before I joined.
So if you came in 1907, then you were eligible to join in
22.
In 1922.
But I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't join before in 25. I think it was in 25, and I've been a member ever since.
But then later, the Pioneer Women of Alaska, the organization, changed its...
had a secret ballot at one of our meetings in the then Pioneer Women Hall that was just on the other side of the library. Afterwards, the culinary workers bought that, and I think that building has been torn down now.
Mm-hmm.
And... we were meeting in that hall for quite a few years, and they had quite a large turnout, and it was a secret ballot, and it was unanimous to voted with quite a big majority of votes, a secret ballot to make it January 1st, 1908. Now, Adrie was said the other day that it would have been much more sensible to have set it sometime in, say, the 1st of January in 1923 before the railroad was completed, because they were still pioneering at that time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But they didn't, so that...
But it was a meeting of the group, and it was unanimous ballot.
It was not unanimous, but it was very much overwhelming to set the date as January 1st, 1908.
However, if anyone belonged to the organization at the time and didn't meet that requirement, could still remain as
a member. Yeah, anyone that was already a member had been a member for some, with the other before we changed the date, they were kept on. And that's how Mrs. Rust happens to be the only one that...
She came later in 1908.
She came in 1908, mm-hmm. during the summer, spring or summer. I don't know just exactly the date. Now, her sister that we were honoring yesterday, she had come up here in 1907 and spent two winters, but then she went out and she didn't come back again before here. I met her a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
and then I met her...
Over the weekend.
Over the weekend, mm-hmm. and then all these doings.
And that's Florence, Beth Hickman Francis. That's Clara Rust's sister.
Yeah.
Where does she live? I forgot to ask her where she lives.
She's in California.
California, someplace, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, today in Fairbanks, there are several members of the Pioneer Women of Alaska living. And Sunday, that was July 22nd, at the Pedro Monument rededication ceremony,
mm-hmm.
The Master Ceremonies introduced you and Mrs. Rust and Mrs. Adriana Coyle and Mrs. Dorothy Loftus as members of the Pioneer Women of Alaska. There are others who live in Fairbanks who were not able to be there. And
that's Louise Carstens.
Yeah, he mentioned Agnes Thomas. Now, she's here in Fairbanks.
Yes, she's at the Pioneer's home.
She's a guest at the Pioneer home.
And so is Mrs. Carstens, and so is Mrs. Minnie Brewis.
And he mentioned Helen Carlisle.
She did much of her pioneering in the Nome area. She was a teacher there for a good many years, and she's a past president of our organization, as all of us are,
yes.
except Dorothy. Of course, Dorothy's been gone so much of the time. And, as far as the ones we're here, around here for the doings.
The Helen Carlisle, the last time.
She's in North Carolina, near her daughter.
Mm-hmm. And then he mentioned Fanny Joyce.
Fanny Joyce, she was had been here in the very early days, and then she spent quite a number of years in the States, and then she was back here for a few years, and now she's back in California, in Taft.
And Charlotte Cuban, he mentioned.
Her husband was a partner with another druggist. Ralph was a druggist. And so was his partner, they had Macintosh and Cuban, and they were in Chino when we first came there, and then afterwards they had their drugstore on the corner of First and Cushman, right when you come off the bridge, and it's on the west side of Cushman.
That's where the Jean's Fabric Shop is.
I'm not so sure what's in there.
There was a drugstore there when I came in 1949. It's probably, I don't know if it was Macintosh and Cuban, but
there was a drugstore there for quite a number of years.
And then you mentioned Margaret Murray of Moose, Wyoming.
Her husband was Oloas. I'm not so sure how you spelled that. Murray, and Margaret was brought up here by her mother and stepfather, Louis Gillette's. And she attended school and graduated later than what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And then she married Olas. I think in 23 or 24. And they went up and they went through Tofty, where I was living at the time, and then way up in the upper Yukon someplace.
Yes, in her book, Two in the Far North, she describes that trip. It was up the Porcupine.
I had a copy of that book, and somebody talked me out of it, and I never did buy another copy.
I didn't have a paperback copy of it. I just reread it here not too long ago. It's really a fascinating book.
Well, I read just part of it.
And she mentioned so many Fairbanks names. She mentions the Roth sisters, who are, you know, Dorothy Loftus.
Her sister was very much disgusted because she was born in Fairbanks, so she wasn't able to be a member of the Pioneer Women.
Is that right?
Her name is Florence Thompson now.
Yes.
And she, her husband was a, Florence's husband was not ambassador, but he was with a...
In
the Foreign Service, yes. Mm-hmm. And they spent a number of years in the Orient and different, practically all over the world they traveled. I haven't seen Florence for quite a number of years.
Then Mrs. Mildred Nerland, that's Mrs. Les Nerland of Fairbanks.
She was brought to Petersburg in 1902, and she must have been very small then. She was just brought there as a baby. She brought up to Petersburg. She never has told us how old she was. And she wouldn't join us for a long time because she didn't want to admit she was old enough to join us.
I see.
And then she finally did. She is a lovely person. And you missed something if you didn't miss her, if you didn't meet Les's mother, Annie Creamer.
Oh,
Annie Nerland.
Oh, I'd met her, but I didn't know her.
Oh, she was a wonderful person. One day she surprised me by sending that mirror over to me as a gift.
Is that right?
She thought I should have it. I guess I haven't cleaned it since I got here. I'm not making any apologies for the way the place looks, because I've been trying to go over things that count.
Well, you have other things that are more important right now.
Very much more important.
Then Mary Joyce of Juneau.
She drove a dog team up over the, what's now the Alaska Highway. Mm-hmm. And people keep calling it Alcan, and I don't like that. I call it the Alaska Highway. And somehow or other, they voted her honorary membership.
Honorary membership.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And well, she's the one who's... She lives in Juneau.
She lives in Juneau. Mm-hmm. But she was awarded the honorary membership, as well as the Eva McGowan, too. She was just an honorary member. But I don't believe in this honorary membership.
Then Henrietta DeRee lives, she's a member, still living in
California. She's the mother of Lucy Bailey
Bailey's name was listed, mm-hmm. too, as a member.
And Nettie Almquist. Have you met Nettie when she's up here? She's been up here different times in the summertime. They grew up here in Fairbanks.
Is she a member, Nettie Almquist?
No. No, but she was born here. You see, Lucy came in with her clothes on, and Nettie didn't.
I see.
Coming through the.
So Henrietta DeRee lives in California, and Lucy Bailey, who's a member of the Pioneer Women,
they live right close to each, mm-hmm. other there.
And then Mary Ferran.
And then it's Henry DeRee is down in California too. It's one of the DeRee family.
Mm-hmm.
And Mary Ferran was Mary Miller to begin with, and they lived in the. She was of the Frank Miller family,
mm-hmm.
and she has brothers and sisters around here yet.
Yeah, her brother is Bobby Miller, and Bobby the late Maxie Miller, and Emma Vasquez.
Yeah.
And then Albina Miller, that's a sister.
That is a sister of Mary, and she's never married.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been in government service in Washington all these years. She comes up here once in a great while. I haven't seen... we used to call her Beans when we were small.
Another name, Daphne Moody, who may still be living in California.
I haven't been assured whether she's still alive or not, but her mother was the Bertha Moody... who had the Esther store for a good many years. You've heard of Moody's store out there at Esther? Mm-hmm. Maybe it still goes by that name.
No,
I don't know.
No.
But she ran that for a good many years. And
is that the Moody? Is Alaska Link's first husband?
He was one of that family, yes.
Yeah, one of that family.
Mm-hmm.
Was that?
He's been dead for quite a long time.
I know Jack said that he and Alaska were married in 1941. They've been married for 32 years. And she was a widow you know, with a little boy.
Yeah.
Little tiny boy.
Yeah, Jimmy.
And Daphne Moody, then, would she be a sister to...
She was an older sister to, what was his name again?
I don't know.
Well, it was several of the boys, and the older boy was Aynor's age, and he's been dead a good many years. But, I know that.
Now, you belong to the, and are active in the Pioneer Women of Alaska, but do you belong to Auxiliary No. 8 Pioneers?
No, I was one of the charter members of that, but I dropped out. They had too much of the ritual of the Pioneer Women, and some of the members, like my daughters-in-law, they come up here as brides. They're here 6 months, and if their husbands are pioneers, belong to the pioneers, they're eligible to belong. Mm-hmm. And then they have the ritual of pioneers of the life. It just got me down, because they are not. They are auxiliary members. And they should have changed the ritual instead of adopting most of the ritual of the pioneer, of the real pioneer women.
Yeah,
we were called an igloo for a little while, but we are the only organization still in existence that is a pioneer women. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Russ just wants to cut us off. She got too many irons in the fire to keep that going too. But Adrie's willing to do the work now, especially when Denny is gone.
Well, now she'll have the time, because she was busy, you know, and he was very ill for a long time.
Yes, he was ill for a long, long time. Now, the other day out there at the monument, I was talking to Earl, and I said, Earl, I said, why don't you have a woman's, one of the women of the pioneers, as speaker? And he says, who would you suggest? I said, Adrie would be ideal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Clara, she's been a town pioneer, you could call. She never gone out to the mines or had the experiences like I have.
Or like Adriana out in the creeks.
And Adriana, she was taken up to Dawson.
In 1900.
In about the time I was born.
Mm-hmm.
And she's had a lot of varied experience. She was back out there in the States in Mount Vernon there for a number of years, but then she came back here. I've known Adrie since 1917 when she came back here.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went down to Ruby to be with her family there. And
married Denny.
And then she married Denny.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's worked hard in the...
You know, I couldn't help speaking to her the other day about it. She took me home from the dinner there that we had up the Travelers. And I said, Adrie, I said, you might not know it, but I said, I've given you a thought a good many times about all what you've gone through, because she only had the one daughter.
Yeah.
And the daughter had one daughter who died in childbirth a number of years ago. And they blame it on the doctor that took care of her. And so she has no... The great-grandson died at that time, or the daughter, whichever it was, died with the granddaughter. And it's pathetic.
Yeah,
you know?
It's sad.
And then with Denny as an invalid as many years
as
he was, he couldn't talk very good or anything like that. She has had an awful cross to bear.
Yes, she has.
And I've known her all these years. She's a very close friend of my cousin, the Slippering Girl, whose father made that chest. They make their home now, the Anchor Holt. They make their home in Hawaii now. They build a home over there.
Mm-hmm.
And Tootsie's a little over a year older than I am. And she'd be eligible for this organization, too, only we couldn't take in any more members, of course. So it...
Well, I would say that if Daphne Moody is still... That would make 18, if she's still alive. So there's 17...
We were talking, Adrie and I, about... I told her I would help her as much as I could if she wanted me to help her in drafting a letter to send to these to find out what they want done with any monies that we have left, and make it definite that, of course, we couldn't have sent a definite amount or anything, but what any amount of money should be used for after we're gone,
mm-hmm.
after we close. And so that it could go through probate and be fixed up that way, instead of just the few of us that are here make a
making
notation.
A decision, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, do you have addresses on some of these people?
Adri would have the addresses, because now she's taken over the secretaryship, and they decided between them that that Mildred will be the president and Adri will be the secretary treasurer, and so that we can arrange for those. And of course, the amount of money they give to the pioneer women, pioneer homes for the women there, will depend upon the number that are there, of course. I thought that they should boost it from $1 to $2 because the women, lots of them, use it for stamps and such things. Yes. And even the postage has gone up.
Yeah, right. To get away from the Pioneer Women of Alaska for a little bit, what organizations in town did you belong to besides this? I know you've mentioned the...
Well, Nellie Priest, who was a very dear friend for me, with me for a good many years till she died, she suggested one day that before I was married that I join the Rebeccas. And I hadn't heard much about the Rebeccas or anything. My dad was deathly against any secret organization. It wasn't religious enough and this and that and the other thing. And that was just before I was married, and I was initiated into the Rebecca Lodge here. Voted and initiated the same night, seeing it was getting close on to my wedding date. We couldn't set the dates for our wedding because we had to have it just... wait till it the freeze up so we could get the Fred's horse and sled brought up to the railroad.
That was your husband's name,
Fred. Yeah, and so we could go as far as from here to down to where the horse would be, and to I think it was Dunbar Station there where the railroad turned south, and we'd go on down to Minto and those other places, and but the Rebeccas wouldn't have another meeting probably before after I left, you see. And they didn't. They met the day after I was married. And so I was initiated then on October 18th, which was Alaska Day of 1921. And 2 years ago, while I was up here, it wasn't quite 50 years, but international president, whom I had known when she was just a common president of the Washington, Alaska, and she'd been visiting here, and I'd visited in her home, and she's been in mine. And when she was up here with others, why, they presented me with my 50-year jewel ahead of time, just couple of months ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so it's I'm finishing 52 years now as a Rebecca.
Mm-hmm.
Then 10 years after I joined the Rebeccas, I had to wait till I had the Masonic affiliation. My brother had joined the Masons then, and then I joined the Eastern Star. And then when the Amaranth started up, I was already eligible, and I was one of the charter members of that. And when we were allowed to take out our, issue life membership, we had to be have the lodge in going for a certain number of years before we could issue life membership. Well, I got life membership number one.
Is that right?
I had to pay for it. Yeah. But the Eastern Star one I was given after being an active member for 25 years. I think they have different stipulations now for awarding life memberships now.
Mm-hmm.
Because after a while they get nearly all of my life membership and they don't get enough money in to pay for other things.
Yeah.
And we didn't have to pay for our life memberships there like I did in the Amaranth.
So you belong to the Pioneer Women of Alaska, the Amaranth, Rebeccas, and the Eastern Star.
But first of all, I joined the church.
You joined the Presbyterian Church.
In 1915, January 9th, 1915.
Is there anyone else in Fairbanks who even approaches your... longevity in the Presbyterian Church here?
I don't know who would be next. Muriel Johnson joined after I had, and she went outside and married and transferred a membership in that, so that's been a fleeting membership. And I'm not sure who is the next in line.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I haven't been active in the church, really active in the church. For that one great hour of sharing, you've heard about that. that they it's worldwide. Why, I send my checks to this church instead of turning it into the church in Mesa, in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And they have, in Phoenix, they have a an endowed bus that goes to these various homes where the senior citizens are and takes the senior citizens to the church and returns them afterwards.
Oh, that's a nice...
And I only have to walk a part of a block. Well, it's north and south, and those north and the north and south blocks are long in any Mormon town, where they're not so so long crosswise, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not near the distance between the 6th and 7th Avenues as it is from even from Osborne Road to the place where we meet the bus there. Mm-hmm. And so it makes a difference that way. And then going back, they pass right square in front of my building. So they let me off at the entrance. They let off the others of my area in the Liney Apartments, because it covers quite a long area.
Yes.
And they let them off first, and then they went come right across in front of my entrance, where I took that picture and showed you that picture.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Why, they let me off right at the entrance. And I've got, there's a self-service elevator in my area, so I can use that instead of the steps, and it
Good.
Makes it nice. And
yeah,
I have a
nice.
Palm tree growing in the ground just below and in front of my front door. Of course, there's only one entrance to an apartment,
yeah.
But the walls are thick between the apartments. And the only time I hear my neighbors is when they go in or out of their doors, and then when I'm in the living room. I can shut the door to the living room to the front area when I go into the bathroom and bedroom area, and don't hear the open and shut.
Good.
And the third house, the third apartment in from the street, so I don't hear much of the street noises either.
That's good. That sounds like a really comfortable place to live.
And you saw how close I was to the drugstore and to the
yes.
grocery store, and. I'm just about as far from the doctor's office that I'm going to now as I am now from Cushman Street.
So you can walk.
I can go down and go down the elevator and go out the F entrance and the back entrance and head over to Osborne Road, and so just short distance, and that makes it handy.
Well,
and then it's
not
very far from Park Central.
To get back here to your family in Fairbanks, you said you were divorced 25 years ago.
Yeah, 25 years ago last January.
And so that would have been 1948.
Uh-huh. Shortly before Don was 21.
So were you working at the time?
Oh, yes, I was working.
You'd been working.
Oh, I'd been working. He hadn't given me any money for a long, long time, so I had to earn my own living, and I paid for the divorce. I didn't ask him.
Where did you work?
I started working in... as a part-time, in June of 1944, I was a substitute cook at the federal jail,
mm-hmm.
which is in the back part on the first floor of the federal building, where the jail was, you know,
yes.
for all those years. And then cook, Mrs. Miller, Mrs. Don Miller, she resigned then that fall, and I was sworn in that fall. In this November or December, whichever it was, of 44, as a permanent member, and I kept up with that till we became a state and they closed the federal jail here.
Did you remain on as cook all the time? Or?
Well, I know for a long time we were under the direct marshals, but it was still under the Department of Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, why... they brought in trained men from the other states under the Bureau of Prisons, and we were had special training for it. That's why I cannot understand for the life of me all that trouble that they had in New York State with the prisons,
mm-hmm.
and they've had a lot of trouble there in Florence, Arizona, just south of Phoenix. I've gone past there with my car when I was still driving. I cannot understand why they're having that trouble if they had the proper training,
mm-hmm.
because I have certificates. I think I've got some right here showing
the training,
the training We
well,
had to.
You took this training as a matron or a guard or.
Well, it was the same training as the men had, and we had to study this book, and we could use the book while we were writing up our exams and this, but to show that we had a full understanding, and I got 100% in my thing there, and I have a little jewel. Showing that I've got 15 years with the Department of Justice.
You retired from the Department of Justice.
I retired here. All I have here are from 1916 and 1918.
Now those are from the Fairbanks...
Fairbanks High School. If you want to look at them, I...
Do they have...
Here's our graduating class. All those names I've told you about.
Sigrid Richardson.
She was a valedictorian, and I was the salutatorian.
Imagine Tonseth.
Yeah.
Wilma Carlson.
She and I are the only ones still alive.
Alton Nordale, Audrey Rose, Ruth Carey, and Lyman.
Ruth Carey.
Ruth Carey. C-A-R-E-Y. C-A-R-E-Y.
No, she didn't graduate with us.
Ruth Carey. And then Lyman.
Nuppie.
K-N-U-P-P-E.
Ruth Carey just must have dropped that.
Oh, this says juniors.
Oh, that's juniors. Oh.
Yeah.
No, I thought I thought that was the one from 1918.
This is 1917.
Oh, 1917. Oh, I thought it was a 1918.
Okay, so then in 1918.
It was Georgia Johnson instead of Ruth Carey, and Audrey Rose didn't graduate with us. She didn't graduate for another year or so.
So it was Sigrid Richardson, Amanda Tonseth, Wilma Carlson, Alton Nordale, Lyman Nuppie.
Nuppie. And George Bentley.
And then you named...
Georgia Johnson.
George?
Georgia.
Georgia?
She's a girl that made the high school in 3 years. And
Georgia Johnson?
So she could go outside with her family and yet be through high school.
Georgia Johnson.
And she's dead, too, a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm. I can see that Alton Nordale was kind of heavy set.
He was a plump one, too.
What, did he remain... Did he
was always down? He was always stout as far as all the time I ever...